Hello and welcome to the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper for the week beginning Monday, September the 23rd. It is produced by Vista, telephone number 0116 249 8839. Items are selected and read by Bev, Aggie and Sally, and it is recorded by Dave. Sunrise and sunset times for the week commencing the 30th of September are sunrise at 7:03 a.m, sunset 6:47 p.m. And we begin with the headline, Murder Inquiry as Man Stabbed in City Street. A man who was first on the scene of a fatal stabbing has described how he tried to help the victim. Local resident and first aider Kieran Reed said he was at home when he heard something down the street in the area of Taylor Road and Cashmere Road, St Matthews, Leicester. Emergency services were called but to the neighbourhood at 3 p.m. on Saturday after a report of a man having been seriously injured. But before they got there, 33-year-old Kieran had run out of his house to try to help the injured man. He said, "We were just at home and we heard something down the street. Someone said a man had been stabbed. It was horrible. I'm a first aider, so my wife said you've got to go in there and try and help." Kieran said he used towels to try to stop the blood flowing from the injured man. "He had this big wound in his back and I tried to stop the bleeding," he said. "Nothing like this has happened before. It's really scary, especially when you've got kids." The police and ambulance service arrived shortly afterwards and the severely injured man was taken to hospital. Police confirmed last night that he died. Fellow resident Habib Musa was out at the time of the stabbing and returned home to find the police cordon. The 37-year-old said, "It is very worrying as there seems to be an increase in crime. It was safe around here for a long time, but I have heard of a few people being attacked in recent years. It is not a normal thing around here. It is a concern that it has happened so close and in the middle of the afternoon." Another resident, Darshna Thakur, 35, said, "My neighbour called and told me that someone had been injured. It is really scary." Police have launched a murder investigation and are appealing for information. Senior Investigating Officer Detective Chief Inspector Tony Yarwood from East Midlands Special Operations Unit, EMSOU, said, "Our inquiries are going to determine the circumstances leading up to the man sustaining his fatal injuries. We believe that the victim was involved in an incident with a group of people in the area of Taylor Road and Cashmere Road between 2:45 p.m. and 3 p.m. So I'd like to appeal to anyone who may have seen this incident or saw where these people made off to after. Call police on 101 or Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111.
The cost of getting our daughter to and from hospital since cancer diagnosis, £3,500 and rising. When 4-year-old Phoebe Thomas was diagnosed with a rare cancer in 2016, money was the last thing on her parents' minds. They never imagined that over the next 3.5 years they would have to spend several thousands of pounds on parking and petrol to get their daughter to hospital appointments, with much more to come. For the family, the cost of parking at hospitals for appointments, as well as travelling to and from them, currently stands at £3,500. Phoebe's mum, Naomi Thomas, spoke out after cancer charity Click Sargent called on the government to create a young cancer patient travel fund to help relieve the pressure on families in the same situation. Recalling her daughter's diagnosis, Naomi said, "Everything else just falls by the wayside. All you can think about is your child's health. You just want them to get better. You'd spend every penny and travel every mile. Those things just don't matter at that point in time. But eventually, you do have to give it some thought. All of the parking we've paid for was subsidised too. I can't imagine how much more it would have been otherwise." Phoebe, who has recently started school part-time, was diagnosed with neuroblastoma in 2016 at 9 months old. It came after her parents Naomi and Russ took her to the doctor when a small lump appeared on her chest. Naomi said it was November. She had a cough and a lump appeared on her chest. We assumed it was a virus and took her to the doctors. We were told to go to A&E where the registrar said they were pretty sure it was developmental cysts, but some tests were booked and an ultrasound. The appointment came through for January, and when we went along for the results, we were told the news. We could think about nothing else. All we wanted was for her to get the treatment she needed. You go into what I call a cancer bubble. It's all you can think about and concentrate on. A treatment plan was drawn up for the youngster, who lives in Wigston, with her parents and sister Emily, 8. Naomi said, for the first year she was treated at the Royal Infirmary. When the cancer wasn't responding, we were accepted onto a trial at Birmingham Children's Hospital. We were there for 3.5 months for one stint, and have travelled there and back countless times. Since then, the family have made 25 trips to Birmingham Children's Hospital, travelling a total of 2,200 miles at a cost of £325 in fuel alone. The family had to travel every 3 weeks for 5 days, going back and forth every day for 12 cycles. They estimate that the six-month period cost £1,000 in fuel and parking expenses alone. Naomi said, we get to the hospital, park up and come to leave and stick it on the credit card. If I can pay it, I pay it. If not, I worry about that later. There's nothing you won't do. You'd never dream of not being there. You do all you can to get your child better. I can't imagine the money that must have been spent on her treatment. It must have cost the NHS so much, and we are so grateful for that. The mum of two, who worked part-time in PR, has had to cut back on her working hours to support Phoebe. About the call for the travel fund, she said, at a time when the emotional stress is just so high, the added burden of financial pressures for things like parking and fuel are just another thing to worry about, something you haven't got the energy to deal with or control. It is what it is. You have to get there, so you have to pay for fuel. You have to park somewhere, so you have to pay for parking. You have to eat, so you buy food. I haven't even totted up what we must have spent picking up things to eat when Phoebe has been getting treatment. It is a stress you really don't need. Phoebe is due to complete her latest round of treatment in October. All being well, she will then have scans every 3 months to monitor her condition.
Everything in place for City's huge celebrations for Diwali. Diwali celebrations in Leicester are amongst the biggest outside India. It is almost time for this year's festivities to begin. Events marking the Festival of Lights start on Sunday, October the 13th, when the city's spectacular Diwali lights will be switched on. More than 40,000 people are expected to attend the launch of the illuminations in the Golden Mile. The switch-on event will begin at 3 p.m. and run until 9 p.m. The main stage in Belgrave Road will feature entertainment from 5:30 p.m. until 8 p.m. and the Diwali Village at Cossington Street Recreation Ground will be open from 3 p.m. until 9 p.m. with stage entertainment from 3 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. The Diwali Village will feature fashion, jewellery, arts, crafts, henna, a children's fun fair, freebies and giveaways. There will also be a variety of traditional snacks and drinks from across the subcontinent. At 3 metres tall, you won't miss moon-shaped fire installations, the Fireball, which is designed to give light and warmth to everyone who visits the park. 100 giant candles will be lit at twilight and will burn bright for the duration of the event. You will also be able to watch the lights of Diwali come to light in the hands of the trio of fire performers called Helter Skelter Arts, who will put on a spectacular fire show. The Diwali community stage promises to dazzle audiences with dance and music. Artists from across the regions will showcase their talents, and there'll be performances from local schools, dance academies and performing arts groups. At Leicester's Wheel of Light, an illuminated Ferris wheel will provide a bird's eye view of the spectacular lights along Belgrave Road. The main stage programme for the Diwali switch-on will run from 5:30 p.m. in Belgrave Road and will be presented by the Leicester Hindu Festival Council, Leicester City Council, with support from The Curve. A key attraction on the main stage will be colourful highlights from Curve's recent community production, Bollywood Jane. The switch on itself will take place at 7:30 p.m. and will be followed by fireworks, which this year can be viewed from Belgrave Road. The 100-foot Wheel of Light will return for less spectacular Diwali celebrations. Following last year's success, the wheel will arrive at Belgrave Road on Friday, October the 11th, and will remain there until Sunday, November the 10th. The glittering centrepiece to the festivities, the wheel will normally be open from Monday to Thursday, 1 p.m. until 9 p.m., and Friday to Sunday, 1 p.m. till 10 p.m., on the day of Diwali light switch on, Sunday, October the 13th, and Diwali Day, Sunday, October 27th, the wheel will run from 1 p.m. until 11 p.m. A ride on the wheel will last between 8 and 10 minutes. There are 24 covered gondolas, each seating 6 people. Wheelchair access is available to one of the gondolas, and assistance will be provided to anyone wanting to use this gondola. Tickets will cost £5 per adult, £4 concession, children below 1.4 metres, students, seniors, and £15 for a family, 2 adults and 2 children, or 1 adult and 3 children. Tickets will be available from the ticket booth on site.
Helmets at the ready as Pear headed into the Dragon's Den. Bosses of an innovative Loughborough business rejected 2 offers when they appeared on Dragon's Den last night. The business, named Head Casey, was founded by Tony Walker and Andy Creek, who met at Loughborough University in 2016. They claim to have created the toughest and most flexible bicycle helmet available on the market. Their design even enables the helmet to be folded and tucked away. Their first product, the Head Casey one, is made using NKC, a soft but rugged material created by the company itself. Head Casey claims the material is able to withstand 300 times more damage and recover better than a normal bicycle helmet. After cementing a strong friendship, Tony and Andy set about going into business together with the aim of revolutionising the cycling industry. They began a Kickstarter campaign and undertook a huge amount of research and testing at Loughborough University, where the company is still based. From there, the business has grown, with their products now available on the market. The idea is something that scouts at BBC Two's Dragon's Den also bought into, and they invited the company for an interview to be on the show. On last night's episode, it was the company's turn to ask the millionaires for help, pitching where Tony and Managing Director George Fox, who has also been involved since day one. George told the Mercury, "I was excited at the thought of going in front of these 5 battle-hardened business people and to be grilled by them, whether we were chosen to appear on TV or not." The pair got their battle plan together before going into the den. George said, "These are seasoned business people, and if they saw that I was starting to panic, I assume that they would go in on that. It makes good TV, so before we went in, we agreed to stick to the basics and to what we know, and for neither of us to go off-piste." Their appearance began in dramatic fashion. "We opened with a lively pitch, smashing a helmet with a big 2-kilo hammer, and that was to demonstrate the fragility of regular helmets and the robustness of ours," said George. "And the opening seemed to work." George said that the room from then on was filled with this great atmosphere. Before their appearance on the BBC Two show, the Head Casey team had agreed that they would ask for £100,000 in exchange for 4% equity of the business, and decided they would not go any lower in order to be fair to their previous investors. After the Dragons had inspected the product, it was time to find out who would be open to making an offer. And both Deborah Meaden and Tej Lalvani were enticed. However, their offers meant the company would have to give away a greater equity than the company had offered in return for £100,000. "They said they liked the product and they could see where it was going," said George. "But unfortunately, the percentages they wanted were just too high. It just wouldn't have worked." "It wasn't all about the money," he added. My biggest excitement was to stand in front of them. That was invaluable, and they offered some great advice. Despite not getting what they were hoping for, the way ahead for the company looks very bright. We are introducing a new way to manufacture, which will be quadruple production capacity, said George. Our current product, the Head KC1, is available in a few different colours, and there will be opportunities in the future for people to customise their helmets. The current sale price for the standard product is £150 on the company website.
Beacon of Hope for youngsters. Children and young people with eating disorders who are currently being sent miles from home for treatment could soon be treated in the county at a purpose-built facility. Health chiefs recently met at the new Children and Adolescent Mental Health Services, CAMHS, based on the site at the Glenfield Hospital to see how the £8 million new build project was progressing. The name of the unit, The Beacon, and artist impressions showing how it will look were also revealed. The unit will have beds available for 13 to 18-year-olds with a range of mental health issues and will mean they will be treated in a building designed specifically for them. Paul Williams, CAMHS Head of Service, said, "Our current temporary ward at Colville only has 10 beds. Not all of the beds are in individual rooms, and the inpatient service is based away from all of our other services. The new centre is completely different. All of the rooms will be individual with their own ensuite. It means that we can now admit children and young people without being concerned about how many males or females we have in at that time. The design of the 15-bed facility has been developed through engagement with staff, service users and families. The facility, which will be run by Leicestershire Partnership Trust, which provides mental health and community health services across the city, county and Rutland, is due to open in August next year." Paul added, "The most notable change will be the facilities themselves. Individual rooms will mean that children and young people will be treated in a much more suitable environment. Another big hitter and benefit of the new centre is that it will be located near to our other mental health services. Adult eating disorders, the Bradgate unit, and staff and team working with other mental health patients will all be nearby, meaning a more joined-up approach. The Beacon Appeal, which aims to raise £15,000 for the new facility, was also launched on Friday. Money raised will be used to buy sensory equipment and lighting for the garden area and additional sports equipment."
Bike riding drug dealer with Nectar 2 targets pupils outside village school. Warning letter to parents as police issue description. A drug dealer is targeting pupils at a village secondary school, police believe. The man is said to have a distinctive tattoo and travels on bike, is approaching children at Rawlings Academy in Corn, according to police. The school, which has about 1,500 students aged 11 to 18, wrote to parents this week to echo the police's concerns. Police have received information from the community that the man is also sending drugs to the wider area, including Borough upon Sour. Rawlings principal Claire Darby wrote, "It has come to their attention that a known drug dealer is frequenting the area of Corn and surrounding villages and has been seen approaching children. We have been advised to tell pupils not to approach this male, and if they are approached, to walk away and not engage with him. The police also recommended that if a child is approached, that they either call police on 101 or to report and ask the parents' carer to do so as soon as possible. The police are concerned that this male appears to be encouraging children to buy drugs. As we will be raising the issue via tutor time and assemblies in the next few days, I thought it important that the parents' carers were also made aware of the situation and the warnings we were being asked to issue." PC Rachel Chapman, who is one of the area's beat officers, said, "Following concerns from residents in Corn about drug misuse in the area, officers have been carrying out further inquiries. An appeal for information was issued on the local neighbourhood link site, and a number of people contacted the force with further information about a man who has been seen acting suspiciously in the Corn and Borough upon Sour areas. Information received suggested that the man may be involved in supplying drugs in the local area and possibly approaching children. In light of that information, we contacted Rawlins Academy and advised them of the information we had received and requested that they speak to the students about stranger danger and not to engage with anyone fitting the suspect's description. We take reports of drug misuse extremely seriously, especially when young people are being approached in this manner. The suspect has been described as a white male in his early 40s, of medium build, with a receding hairline and ginger goatee-style beard. He has a very distinctive tattoo on the left side of his neck showing a spade from a deck of playing cards with a cat's face in the centre. He has been known to get around on a mountain bike. Anyone who knows who he is or witness any drug misuse is asked to contact 101 immediately.
Tragic students' family-backed new initiations advice. The family of a student who died after a heavy drinking session is backing a warning about initiation ceremonies and excessive alcohol consumption. Ed Farmer, 20, who was studying at Newcastle University, died from the toxic effects of alcohol during a banned freshers' initiation event in December 2016. His parents, Jeremy and Helen, are supporting a report which calls on universities to end a zero-tolerance policy on initiations, which pushes them underground and makes them more dangerous. Ed, who went to school in Tugby, Stony Stanton and Oakham, suffered a fatal brain injury after going into cardiac arrest following a pub crawl, organised by Newcastle University Agricultural Society, where first years were egged on to drink vodka trebles. At the inquest last year, all the students who gave evidence said that they were aware initiations were banned and the university had a zero-tolerance approach to them. The report, Initiations at UK Universities, sets out recommendations for universities to prevent and respond to dangerous behaviours that arise from initiations events, and to drive a change in attitudes towards these events. The report from Universities UK, UUK, in collaboration with Newcastle University, said, "Not all events labelled as initiations are inherently bad. It is the inappropriate and/or dangerous behaviours that are sometimes involved that make them risky. A blanket zero-tolerance approach can push activities into private spaces, such as off-campus accommodation, so making them more dangerous. A purely zero-tolerance punitive approach is ineffective and can lead institutions to do very little to tackle the issue since. Because initiations are banned, there is an assumption they are not taking place. Institutions should review their disciplinary procedure and protocols for dealing with such activities and clarify with students and staff the sanctions that apply for disregarding these." At the inquest in October, Coroner Karen Dilks concluded there was a risk of future deaths where unaware of the risk of consuming large quantities of alcohol over a short period of time. Jeremy said, "The loss of any young man at the start of their adult life is a tragedy. When the young man is one of your sons who had intelligence, wit and compassion beyond his years, but yet died so needlessly, the loss is all the more devastating. Ed had managed to navigate a very easy and enjoyable path through life, but on that night his good fortune deserted him. Nobody was to blame and no one should blame themselves. As a family, we appreciate the difficulties in stopping these needless deaths, but would like to thank all those who are working hard to try to reduce the risks of something similar happening without impacting on the social lives of students." Newcastle's Vice-Chancellor and President, Professor Chris Day, who chaired the UUK panel, said, "3 years ago, we lost a bright, talented, much-loved student. There is no doubt it was the situation Ed found himself in that night which led him to drinking an excessive quantity of alcohol. We all wish we could rewind 3 years, but we can't go back, and so we are doing everything we can to minimise the chances of anything like this again."
Police issue a direct plea to man's killers. The senior officer leading a murder investigation has made a direct appeal to the killer or killers of a man to come forward warning they will be found. Detective Chief Inspector Tony Yarwood spoke out as the victim was named as Mohammed Jibril, age 21. He was found injured in St. Matthew's, Leicester, at 3 p.m. on Saturday and died during the early hours of Sunday. A post-mortem examination carried out yesterday revealed he died as a result of a stab wound. Officers believe Mr. Jibril was involved in an incident with a group of people in the area of Taylor Road and Kashmir Road between 2:45 p.m. and 3 p.m. Detective Chief Inspector Yarwood said, "A family have sadly lost a loved one and we are determined to find those responsible for the horrific attack on Mohammed. I'd urge anyone who hasn't yet spoken to the police to come forward if they witnessed the incident or saw where the suspects made off to after. Maybe you were passing through the area and may have witnessed something, or perhaps you captured something connected to this incident on CCTV or dashcam. I believe that vital information about what happened lies in the local community, and I want to work with you. I would urge anyone who knows something to get in touch. No matter how small your information may seem to you, it could greatly assist the investigation, so we would urgently like to speak with you. I also make a direct appeal to the person or persons responsible for this attack. We will identify you, and we will find you. Those who are protecting the people responsible are doing themselves no favours. Do the right thing and come forward." Simon Johnson, manager of the charity St. Matthew's Big Local, said, "On behalf of those living and working in St. Matthew's, we're all very saddened by this news and to hear of this incident in our community. People have been coming in and contacting us by phone and social media to say how shocked and saddened they are. They're also concerned about the negative message it may send out about the estate where 4,500 people live in what is a close-knit community where people get on well. We want to work with the police to keep people informed."
Landlord licences proposed. Big changes are being planned which could affect nearly 2,000 rented homes in private areas. Officials want to bring in a scheme in South Wigston which would require landlords to be licensed before they can move tenants into their properties. Houses for rent would have to pass inspections to ensure they meet certain standards. Landlords would have to pay a fee to apply for a licence under the scheme proposed by Oadby and Wigston Borough Council. It said it has not yet decided on a fee, but said other authorities with similar schemes typically charge between £700 and £800 to apply for a licence covering a 5-year period. The council said it will consult people on a proposal before it makes any final decisions, but it has selected a specific area, South Wigston Ward, in which there are about 1,800 rented homes. The area is bounded by Dorset Avenue to the north and Saffron Lane to the west, the railway line to the east and the canal to the south. A council spokeswoman said the scheme would ensure owners or managers of privately rented properties are legally required to get a licence for each property they rent out in the South Wigston area. South Wigston has a higher than average crime rate, plus high levels of antisocial behaviour. Plus, almost one in three privately rented properties is failing to meet the decent home standard. The scheme is vital for raising the health and welfare of the tenants and the wider community. The spokeswoman said, "The scheme will have numerous benefits, not only for tenants, but for landlords too. For example, an improved confidence in the property market, potential growth in the property values, improved communications with the council and a better reputation for private landlords. For tenants, a better understanding of not only the housing standards they should expect, but also of their own responsibilities. If the scheme is implemented, it will provide tenants with written tenancy agreements, inventories and protected deposits. Critics have warned the licensing scheme could lead to rent rises as landlords pass on the cost to the tenants." Council leader John Boyle said, "Housing in South Wigston isn't bad, but we do need to keep an eye on it to ensure it is all to standard it should be. Of the 1,800 properties, only 200 or 300 are in desperate need, but we need to find a way to deal with those. If you look at Oadby and Wigston, it's quite a nice place, but it's a diverse area in terms of social economics. The zone won't be forever. Hopefully, it will improve standards. Then we can look at other areas, but we want to start where it is needed the most. The costs are one-off, but there is a risk they could be passed on to the tenant, and if that happens, it could be counterproductive. We will look at ways to try and stop this happening. The consultation period has begun, with residents and landlords being asked how the scheme should proceed. It will be carried out through direct mail, questionnaires and a series of drop-ins at the Customer Service Centre in Bell Street, Wixton and Tesco Cafe, South Wixton.
Travel Pioneers' legacy has not been tarnished. A historian says the collapse of Thomas Cook will not tarnish the legacy of its founder. Graham Lees, the vice chairman of Leicester Victorian Society, said he, Thomas Cook, had a very big impact on the city and he always will. He was a philanthropist. He organised outings by train for Leicester people and took them to Loughborough for a day out. He did this to get people away from the racetrack, which was on Victoria Park, because he believed it was a den of iniquity. That was just the beginning. Despite Thomas Cook bosses spending hours in meetings to try to find a solution, it was announced yesterday the company had gone into administration. Graham, 80, said he would be very sad to see that this has happened to his lifetime's work. Cook was born at just the right time when people were starting to travel more. His son was the brains behind the business, but it was his idea to get people out of the city for holidays. Graham believes Thomas Cook will never be forgotten for the work he did, no matter what happens to the company. He said, "I'm sure his legacy will live on. He is famous for what he did in his lifetime. He brought holidays to the everyday man. He started with nothing. He left school at 10 years old. He worked hard and put his whole life into making the company work. He was just a good guy." To pay tribute to Cook and his lifetime's work, Graham laid a wreath on the grave of Thomas Cook in Welford Road Cemetery yesterday.
Hundreds Help Hospice mark 25th birthday. Supporters in their hundreds helped a hospice celebrate its 25th birthday. Rainbows, which cares for children and young people with life-limiting illnesses, opened its doors to the community on Saturday. Dee Sissons, Chief Executive of the Loughborough Hospice, said, "Once again, we are overwhelmed by the support of the community. I would like to thank every single person who has joined us today. It is fantastic." Visitors took a tour, dropped in on talks from staff about the charity's work, and heard music from 13-year-old CBBC star Eva Rose. There was also a cake competition for visitors, judged by baker Fiona Cairns and former cricketer Matthew Hogarth, who are both Rainbow's patrons. Fiona, who was commissioned to make the wedding cake for the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, created a birthday cake. She said, "It was a huge honour and privilege to be asked to make the cake, and I feel humbled to be involved with Rainbow's. It is such a unique and special place." Over the past few months, supporters have been knitting flowers. These were placed in the grounds as a memory meadow, and visitors who made a donation to Rainbow's towards the project could choose a flower to take home with them. Former Leicestershire and England cricketer Matthew said, "It is an honour to be here today and help celebrate 25 years of Rainbow's. Coming to Rainbow's is always fantastic, and it was great to judge the bake-off competition." Wendy Towell of Shepshed was at the hospice for the first time. She said, "What a fabulous place! It is nothing like I expected. It is so bright and cheery and there is so much going on. It is great to be able to support Rainbow's."
Cycle team clocks up 340 miles and £45,000. Cyclists on Hope Against Cancer's 2,500 furlong cycle challenge have completed a 340 mile round trip from Leicester and around the north of England, with the fundraising now having passed the £45,000 mark. The 2,500 furlongs challenge, named in keeping with the equestrian theme, is a biannual fundraiser organised by Hope, Leicester's cancer research charity. Starting and finishing at Leicester's racecourse, the route took in the Yorkshire Moors as cyclists passed through some of the England's most famous racecourses, Doncaster, York itself and Market Razon. The money raised will go towards funding research into the prevention and treatment of cancer, with each cyclist raising a minimum of £1,000 to support local cancer research. A total of 40 cyclists took on Hope Challenge over 4 days. One of the most remarkable participants was David Lilyman, who rode alongside his daughter Rebecca. In 2014, David was diagnosed with throat cancer at the age of 46. After months of treatment at the Hope Clinic Trials facility, he was given the all clear. This was David's second challenge. He rode the previous one back in 2017. Another rider came in the form of Chris Fellowfree. Like Sam Cann, who also rode, Chris is a Hope-funded researcher who recently swam the English Channel, raising more than £10,000 in the process. While Chris was only meant to be involved in the event in a support capacity, he ended up riding an impressive 115 miles on the last day of the challenge. The challenge's send-off was attended by a number of Leicester's dignitaries and supporters, including the Lord Lieutenant of Leicestershire, Mike Capel, who gave a speech to send the cyclists on their way. Leicester Riders team captain Andy Thompson and player Harrison Gamble, both Hope Against Cancer ambassadors, led the riders out of the city. Hope CEO Nigel Rose said he was immensely proud of every cyclist who took part. The 2,500 furlong cycle challenge has proved to me once again just how inspirational the Leicestershire community is. It gives me great pleasure to tell you that £45,000 have been raised for vital local cancer research, and it is always a privilege for me to be part of the support crew in the cycle rides. Our cyclists and support volunteers are a key part of the Hope Against Cancer family of supporters, and I'm overwhelmed by the generosity, hard work and commitment of everyone that took part. To find out more, you can get involved in future fundraisers and visit hopeagainstcancer.org.uk.
Aerospace giant set to move its intelligence team to Space Park. Airbus is planning to move its Earth observation team to Space Park, Leicester. The global aerospace giant has agreed to relocate its Airbus intelligence team to the £25 million first phase of the complex, which is set to be built just north of Leicester. The Mercury has already revealed that it is among a number of global players, including Lockheed Martin, Thales Alenia Space, Hewlett-Packard and Amazon, set to move into the space park over the coming years. The Airbus team, currently based on Meridian Business Park on the southern outskirts of Leicester, uses satellite imagery and data to provide services to clients working in sectors such as oil and gas, maritime, the environment, defence and security. When work on the first phase of the space park is completed at the end of 2020, Earth observation will be a key part of the work carried out there. That will be the first phase in what will eventually be a £100 million base for European space research and investment. Future phases could include a production line to take the cost of satellites down from tens of millions of pounds to millions of pounds. The space park will be built next to the National Space Centre and will be a combination of commercial and academic activities with flexible accommodation for start-ups right through to the established multinationals. It is hoped it will create more than 2,500 high-value jobs. The first phase will include relocating the National Centre for Earth Observation, run by the University of Leicester, along with new teaching and laboratory facilities and space for businesses. When complete, it is hoped the space park will win a substantial share of the £400 billion global space market. Edmund Burke, acting Vice Chancellor of the University of Leicester, said, "Space Park Leicester will be transformational for our university, city, region and the UK space industry." Colin Painter, UK Managing Director of Airbus Defence and Space, said, "We hope to see a number of benefits from our involvement with the space park, from capturing research outputs which will seed our product and process innovation to increasing the scale and quality of researchers and talent."
Food Fest back with star-studded lineup. East Midlands Food Festival returns next month with a new theatre programme and exhibitors. Star guests include CBeebies presenter Katie Ashworth, who will focus on cooking for kids. Katie presents I Can Cook, in which she and her helpers cook tasty meals as well as sing songs. Also in the theatre will be Lincolnshire food celebrity Rachel Green, local chefs Tony Fitt from Stapleford Park and Tom Paxton from Brooksby Hall, and the cooking Maharaja, who will be talking about samosas and Bollywood. Stephen Hallam from The Pie Shop will be hand-raising a Melton Mowbray pork pie, and Teresa Bovey will introduce proceedings with her family recipes with a twist. The street food area will feature Greek food, Indian fish and chips, big melt cheese sandwiches, seafood and savoury and sweet crepes. These are in addition to the now traditional Indian offerings, stone-cooked pizza, paella, Polish sausage baps, burgers, hog roast and Caribbean food. For those who cannot wait until November's Chockfest, there will be a wall of chocolate, German chocolate kisses and a hot waffles draped with chocolate sauce. On the savoury side, there will be new charcuterie offerings and smoked and barbecue products. Tipples include local gin, vodka and English rum, as well as the Trappist beer produced by the monks of Leicestershire's Mount St Bernard's Abbey. Leicester's DMU Gospel Choir and Maelstrom Ukulele Band will be providing entertainment. For children under 16 who get in free, there is a kids zone with activities to entertain and educate them about food. The festival is organised by Melton Mowbray Food Partnership. Organiser Matthew O'Callaghan said, "This will be our largest event for years, with new producers, new offerings in the street food area and an updated theatre programme with, of course, the old favourites that make our festival one of the leading regional food festivals in the UK. The festival takes place on October the 5th and 6th. Tickets are £6 or £5 in advance. They're on sale at the Visit Leicester Centre in Leicester and Ye Old Pork Pie Shop in Melton, or online."
Armed cops swoop as woman took her airgun to the park. A woman was arrested by armed police after going to the park for some target practice with her airgun. Alec Bosniak, who claimed she had no idea she was breaking the law, was walking along Tudor Road in Leicester, where she lived, when a passerby noticed a gun in her hand. The witness called the police, who sent firearms officers to the area. As they approached 21-year-old Bosniak, an officer spotted the airsoft pistol, which was black and resembled a semi-automatic handgun, but only fired small round pellets. The officer shouted, "Gun!" and police rushed at Bosniak and ordered her to get to the ground. On checking the weapon, they found the gun had a magazine with one pellet in it. Possessing an imitation firearm in a public is an offence under the Firearms Act 1968. At Leicester Magistrates Court, Bosniak pleaded guilty to the charge, although she denied a claim by the witness she had pointed the gun at a member of the public. The case will go on to Leicester Crown Court, where a judge will hear from witnesses and decide whether Bosniak did point the gun at someone. During Friday's hearing at the Magistrates Court, prosecutor Suhi Bazi said, "It was on August 31st at 8:10 p.m. when a woman was walking from Narborough Road to her car, which was parked on Tudor Road. She noticed three people, this defendant and two males, walking towards her in the same direction as two other women who were ahead of them. As the witness got into a car, she saw the defendant holding a handgun and pointing it at the back of one of the females who were about 15 metres away. The witness drove up the street and reversed in Bosworth Street and phoned the police. At that point, the defendant was pointing the gun towards some bushes. The armed police arrived and conducted a search. They saw the defendant smoking a cigarette, walking towards Braunston Gate. Another armed police vehicle arrived and the officers got into position. The police believed the handgun was real and they were shocked by the manner in which she was carrying it. Officers told her to get on the floor and she did comply. Bosniak from Romania has no previous conviction in this country. She said she had suggested going to the park to do target practice. Mr. Bozzi said she didn't know it was an offence to have it in a public place. She agreed in interviews some could fear for their safety, but she didn't admit causing anyone any fear of harm. Razid Sud, representing Bosniak, said of the prosecution case, "There is a loaded firearm being pointed at the head of someone. This is disputed by her. The court clerk advised the magistrates that whether or not Bosniak accepted aiming a gun at someone else, the matter was serious enough to be sent to Leicester Crown Court."
Please get trauma kits to treat stab victims. Trauma kits will provide frontline police officers with emergency medical equipment to help save lives when responding to knife crime. Police and Crime Commissioner Lord Willie Buck took delivery of the first batch of catastrophic haemorrhage kits when they arrived in Leicestershire. The packs, worth £10,000, will be carried in all 120 frontline police vehicles across the county. They will enable officers to treat blood loss from life-threatening injuries. Lord Bark joined Lee Brentnell, Ambulance Operations Manager for East Midlands Ambulance Service, EMAS, in welcoming the first batch of kits during National Anti-Knife Crime Week, Operation Scepter. This is a hugely important step to ensure our police officers have everything they need to act swiftly in those vital early minutes following a catastrophic injury, Lord Buck said. We are doing everything possible to prevent people from carrying knives in the first place. But it is a sad reality, still too many people are needlessly dying through violence. These packs will give victims the best possible chance of survival in the event of trauma before paramedics arrive at a crime scene. Police officers are already expected to give first aid as part of their duties. These kits will ensure those efforts are supported by the very latest medical equipment in those precious early minutes, which are quite often the difference between life and death. The packs, the same kits used by EMAS, contain chest seals, blast bandages, wound dressings, and a tourniquet. EMAS has agreed to replace the contents of each pack once they have been used. Mr. Brentnell said, "We have seen an increase of violent knife crime across the East Midlands, which is also reflected nationally. This is a vital piece of partnership working. I would like to thank Lord Buck for funding the initial deployment of these packs." Superintendent Shane O'Neill, who leads the force's response to knife crime, said, "One life lost to knife crime is one too many. Our officers are often the first emergency service to arrive at the scene, so anything which can help us to save lives in those crucial moments is vital. Carrying a knife puts an individual in more danger, and so we would always appeal for them to not pick up a knife in the first place." The Home Office has granted Leicestershire an extra £1.4 million in 2019-2020 to finance operational activity and preventative work.
Let's get empty housing back to solve city crisis. People are being urged to report disused and empty homes to try to solve Leicester's housing crisis. City Council officials estimate there are nearly 5,000 properties not being lived in, and they want to take steps to bring them back into use. They're looking particularly at properties that have been unoccupied for at least 18 months, with a view to giving them a new lease of life. The Council has an empty homes team, which has returned 3,173 privately owned empty properties back to use as family accommodation in the past 15 years. They say empty homes spoil the appearance of streets and can attract vandalism, fly-tipping, vermin and other pests, while also causing damp problems for adjoining properties and even becoming fire risks. Councillor Ellie Cutkelvin, the Assistant City Mayor for Housing and Education, said, "The empty homes team works hard to identify houses which have fallen out of use and works closely with owners to offer advice, support and guidance about the options available to ensure empty properties become occupied again. It is wrong to have empty homes when we have such a high level of need for good quality housing in the city. We want to hear from people who live near an empty property, as well as people who own or have inherited one and are unsure what to do with it. Like most big cities, Leicester has an ongoing need for more housing, and in most cases these empty homes can be repaired and given a new lease of life to help tackle the city's housing shortage. Every case is different, so the empty homes team can be contacted for further advice. They can then investigate any property that is referred to them and provide an update on the outcome. In the worst cases, where an owner does not address problems with their empty property, the council has powers to take possession by way of compulsory purchase order. There are about 6,000 on the waiting list for a council house in the city, and since 2004, 119 empty properties have been bought up under compulsory purchase orders, where all other attempts to bring the property back into use have failed. The Labour-run council was elected in May with a manifesto pledge to provide 1,500 council and social homes in the next 4 years. To report empty homes, ring 0116 454 5100 or email emptyhomes@leicester.gov.uk.
War veteran Tom still going strong at 100. A war veteran who spent 3 years as a Japanese prisoner has celebrated his 100th birthday. Tom Sansom is one of a few surviving members of Leicestershire Regiment and the East Surrey who were imprisoned after the fall of Singapore in 1942. The ex-corporal enlisted at the Glen Plover Barracks on November the 15th, 1939, and served with the 1st Battalion, the Leicestershire Regiment. He fought in Agra, India in 1940 and 1941, and later in Penang in the Malayan Campaign. From 1942, as a prisoner of war, he was initially in the Shanghai Prison of War area, later moving to work on the Burma-Thai Railway, working in various railway camps. In 1945, he was moved to Obon via Bangkok, from where he was later liberated and then repatriated from Rangoon on the SS Orbiter, arriving in Liverpool on November 25, 1945. He was discharged on November 24, 1945. Tom lives in a Willow care home in Hinckley. He was joined there for his birthday by his friends and family, as well as Bob Allen from the Royal Leicestershire Regiment, who presented him with some memorabilia. Steve Reynolds, 68, is Tom's stepson and was there for his party. "He is a wonderful man and I love him to bits," said Steve. "He's got a wicked sense of humour. For his age, he's as bright as a button." When Tom got back to Hinckley after the war, he took up his previous job as a butcher in the town. In 1946, he married Peggy and they have 6 children. In the early 1950s, together with his father, he started a hardware business. Tom also served as a special constable and until recently has been an active member of the Fellowship of the Services, serving as chairman several times. In later years, Tom remarried to Alma and they enjoyed a long retirement together. For his birthday, he also received greetings from the Lord Lieutenant of Leicestershire and from the trustees and the General Committee of the Royal Tigers Association.
Bake Off fans fume as Priya survives double elimination. There was another narrow escape for Leicester Bake Off contestant Priya O'Shea after she survived a double elimination. Before the results of Tuesday night's Channel 4 show were announced, judges Paul Hollywood and Prue Leith made it clear, just as they did last week, that the 34-year-old marketing consultant was among the bottom few. And then it was announced that this would be the week that 2 bakers would be sent home rather than 1. However, it was Welsh wonder Michelle Evans-Fetchy and goth Helena Garcia who ended up leaving the tent. The result was a bit of a shock for viewers since Helena had come first in the technical earlier in the same episode and Michelle had been the star baker of week 1. At the end of the show, Priya told Prue, "I thought I was going." Speaking to the camera, she said, "I definitely feel like I've dodged the biggest bullet in the world." As usual, there were plenty of viewers who took to Twitter furious about what happened at the end of the show, which had also seen contestant Rosie Brandreth Poynter drop a tart and Michael Chakraverty have a bit of a breakdown over a deep fryer. Last week, there was anger after Priya's hopeless technical was followed by 56-year-old Phil Thorne being sent home for a dull showstopper. Responding to episode 5 last night, one person said this morning, "Woken up still fuming at this week's episode of Great British Bake Off. Vehemently disagree with the result." Another said, "I think Priya has been so bad that they've blocked her from their memories. That's the only logical explanation for her being worse 2 weeks in a row." Yet 3 others got booted out before her. That and the fact that they're just doing it for the controversy, so we'll keep talking about Great British Bake Off. Helena, who stuck with her signature style by creating a sea monster custard tart and a vampire-themed showstopper, had many fans who were unhappy to see the last of her. But Priya defended herself on Twitter after seeing a critical tweet from 2014 semi-finalist Chetna McCann. Chetna replied to a tweet from someone who said they were glad Priya was still in the competition with the words, "Sorry, mate, but she has been at the bottom for a few weeks and should have gone." Priya replied, "I felt sad to read this. Please remember that you are only seeing a very small edited portion of the judges' feedback."
New phase of moon landing anniversary celebrations. A giant moon installation is returning to Leicester Cathedral with a new programme of events next month. The moon at the cathedral will see Luke Jerram's Museum of the Moon return to the place of worship for 10 days from Friday, October the 11th. Almost 30,000 people visited the cathedral last year to view the 23-foot high artwork, which is internally lit and features detailed NASA imagery of the lunar surface. Since then, it has toured the country, appearing in cities including Liverpool, Newcastle and Edinburgh. Cathedral visitors will be encouraged to dance under the light of the moon at silent discos on October the 16th for under-16s and 17th for students and adults, attend a moonlit concert on October the 19th and enjoy a wine tasting on October the 15th. The events are part of the One Giant Leap programme, which sees the city mark the 50th anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. A spokesman for Leicester Cathedral said, "The Cathedral, in partnership with BID Leicester, is delighted to welcome back Luke Jerram's Museum of the Moon in the year we commemorate the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. Admission to open sessions are by donation, with £2 suggested for adults and £1 for under-18s. Other events are priced individually and can be booked via Eventbrite. Other One Giant Leap programme events in the city during October half term include the Brick Live Outer Space Trail, which will bring 15 models made entirely of Lego bricks to venues around the city centre with a digital trail to follow.
iDoctor gets grant for high tech research. An iDoctor has been awarded a doctoral fellowship worth £386,225 to run a research centre in collaboration with Great Ormond Street Hospital. Dr. Zahib Rufi, a specialist registrar in ophthalmology at Leicester's hospitals and academic clinical fellow at the University of Leicester, received an award from the National Institute for Health Research. His research involves hand-held optical coherence tomography in infants and young children with rare conditions affecting vision. Using this technology, he can obtain high-resolution 3D images of the retina and optic nerve at the back of the eye without the need for surgery. His ambition is to prevent blindness and save lives. Leicester is a world leader in handheld OCT, being the first centre in Europe to use this technology, which is housed in the University of Leicester's Ulverscroft Eye Unit at Leicester Royal Infirmary. Great Ormond Street Hospital is an international centre of excellence in child healthcare, treating highly complex conditions in expert multidisciplinary teams. Dr. Rufai said, "I am delighted and humbled to be awarded this fellowship. It is exciting to start this collaboration between Leicester and Great Ormond Street Hospital for the benefit of infants and young children with rare conditions."
Tragic Sisters Fund passes £1,000. More than £1,000 has been raised to help a family meet the costs of a joint funeral for two sisters who died within 24 hours of each other. A crowdfunding page was set up to help relatives of Jacqueline and Amanda Williams. Jacqueline, 57, fell seriously ill in Ingolstadt, Germany, this month with a brain hemorrhage. When her sister Amanda, 54, heard the news, she too collapsed in the street near her Shepshed home as she prepared to fly out to Germany to be by her sister's bedside. Neither of the siblings regained consciousness. Jacqueline died on September the 6th and Amanda was pronounced dead the following day. Amanda's daughter Kelly Akins from Market Harborough is arranging a funeral for the sisters at Gilrose Cemetery in Leicester at the end of the month. Her best friend Helen Springthorpe launched the online crowdfunding page, hoping to raise £2,500. So far, £1,350 has been contributed. Kelly said the money would go towards the funeral costs and a celebration of the sisters' lives, while also helping with repatriating Jacqueline. Helen said, I can't imagine how Kelly has got through the pain of this past week. I've never known a closer relationship between mother and daughter, and know that my best friend will never be the same ever again, which is why I've set up this page to try to help. I don't want the added worry of funeral costs and expenses to impact further on what is already a horrendous time. Kelly, as always, has been amazingly strong and wants her mum's life celebrating in the way in which she lived hers, positively with love, laughter and glitter. By raising some money for Kelly and her family, I hope we can all help give them the amazing send-off they deserve. Kelly said, it is complicated getting my auntie back from Germany. There is a lot of paperwork. It's also quite expensive and there have been a few issues which we have to sort out. Having to pay for two funerals and the cost to bring Jacqueline back, it's another worry for our family and the help will be so greatly appreciated. My best friend Helen and her family had the idea and asked me. I was blown away and I had never thought about it. But it makes me cry every time I look at the total so far. Donations can be made online via GoFundMe.com.
Safety boost as 68 schools join Keep Clear campaign. Parents who park illegally outside 68 Leicestershire schools could get £70 fines from this month. Education bosses have extended the list of schools in the county that will be included in patrols by a CCTV camera car. The car takes the registrations of parents who flout mandatory zigzag restricted zones outside their gates. Enforcement has begun in time for the new school term as part of the council's School Keep Clear campaign. County Council Cabinet Member for Environment and Transport, Councillor Blake Payne, said, "We know this inconsiderate and dangerous parking outside schools can be a real problem, and we believe that the School Keep Clear scheme has gone some way to alleviate concerns in communities where we now enforce it. It is great to see more schools getting involved, and I would urge those that haven't signed up to get in touch to find out more. The work involves ensuring traffic regulation orders are in place through upgrading mandatory signs and lines so the zones are enforceable. The council says enforcement officers carry out their normal duties while the camera car is being used as part of the scheme. The CCTV car uses automatic number plate recognition technology and collects the necessary evidence to enable fines to be issued via post to drivers who park on zigzag markings. Since the beginning of the scheme, 22 warnings have been issued and 241 penalties have been processed to motorists parking illegally." Councillor Payne added, "The trial isn't about catching and fining motorists. We want people to stop parking inconsiderately near schools as it endangers the lives of pedestrians and causes a great deal of concern for schools and parents. We work closely with schools and colleges to improve issues around on-street parking, which involves providing help and guidance on school travel plans. Since it launched in September 2018, the scheme has seen 146 schools sign up, with a further 11 schools set to join later this year, subject to consultations."
We now have a selection of readers' letters. "Schools being too strict can have adverse effect," by Max Nottingham from Lincoln. "It has been fashionable for some schools to boast how strict they are, but would such strictness just be cruel to some children? Some children loathe schooling anyway, without inflicting prison rules on them. So parents, if you feel your child has been unfairly treated, you can complain to your local or national newspapers. I attended a school long ago which had corporal punishment."
Mike Ross from Wigston says, "Jane McDonald gave us a sensational evening. I cannot let the sensational appearance of Jane McDonald at De Montfort Hall go without an appreciative comment. I have never witnessed such an ovation for anyone greater than that at the interval and the close of her memorable concert. She not only has a wonderful voice and is as equally at home singing a calm ballad, especially the moving tribute to her late mother, as in raising the tempo with numbers such as her dance song medley. She is adept at taking pauses to engage with her audience, and there is much humour in her personality which makes her so engaging. She has gone from strength to strength and gained even greater status with excellent series on television. She's clearly a most welcome visitor to Leicester. I hope that she'll return next year.
Are hand car washes environmentally clean? While the various hand car wash operators provide a very valuable service to the people of Leicestershire, I am concerned at the level of water consumption and possible pollution. Do the various council environmental services departments regularly check these operators to ensure the foul water from the car wash is going into the foul drains or the storm drains? In cases when I have visited these places, there is water running off into the nearest storm drain, hence polluting the streams and rivers with chemicals and detergents. This matter is of grave concern for the wildlife that relies on rainwater in our streams and rivers. Similarly, are they monitored for the amount of water they consume? Sometimes I have seen taps constantly left running and overflowing of water containers. I would like to continue to use these places and don't want to see them shut down, but as a concerned citizen, we also need to ensure we are not building up environmental problems for the future.
Make use of buildings which already exist, by D.A. Cookson Groby. We hear of housing and warehousing being approved throughout the countryside, much against the objections of local councils and residents. We are losing lots of land as more and more buildings and warehouses are built, but we also have space taken up by disused buildings. There is no incentive to use the city, where we have empty buildings like the Late Palais, which was a lovely nightclub, and the BSS building in Lee Circle, as well as Free Cranes Pub. They were left derelict and then set upon numerous times by vandals. Also, the old site of the first garage on Abbey Park Road has been empty for years. The City Council should put pressure on landowners to refurbish empty buildings such as the Friars Mill, which was threatened with demolition. Time goes on and people want to demolish the BSS building, which is a wonderful building for flats. Something needs to be done, but the Council seems prepared to sit back and do nothing. Having more people living in the city helps the shops and market. Also, there would be less use of the car, but sadly, we are on a headlong course of road building, which adds more carbon to the already diminishing atmosphere. New housing at Beaumont Lees has caused the destruction of many trees on Anstey Lane, with nothing replacing them. We read of the world getting warmer, and there is a lack of control over congested roads. Just adding more does not help. Public transport does not link up to new housing, as is Anstey with the Bloor and Gelson building. There are no bus stops and every house has a car. There should be more investment in making people use public transport. We are only a small part of the world, but on my travels, some cities are clogged with traffic and carbon emissions are terrible. What future is there for the coming generations?
Immigration will not be halted, and that's fine. I have news for Ray Newcombe. Immigration won't be halted post-Brexit. Stopping immigration flow will ease problems, mailbox September the 21st. Instead of welcoming Polish, Romanian, other EU doctors, nurses and the ilk, we'll be welcoming Australian, Japanese and other nations' citizens to our shores to fill those vacancies that us Brits just can't or don't want to do. Ray's EU neighbours will be replaced by other unfamiliar faces. Those houses that Ray worries about being taken by Johnny Foreigner will still be bought by overseas owners, registered for tax reasons in some offshore British dependent territory. Rented out to people from abroad, setting out on a new career here in our part of the world. Why is that so bad, Ray? Freedom of movement works both ways. It's one of the greatest liberating things that the EU has done, giving our children the ability to seek opportunities overseas, to experience culture and ideas at first hand. That freedom will soon possibly be stymied by xenophobic attitudes whipped up by right-wing politicians. The sunlit uplands that Ray painted of a cheap and available housing is a myth. It's our failure to build homes, not the demands of others, that has caused tensions. We've simply not built enough homes over the past decades. Indeed, we're still not building enough. What houses we do build will remain unaffordable to many without intervention by government in the market, successive governments refusing to do that in case they upset home-owning voters. No, Ray, you took aim at the wrong people. It's the xenophobes and the NIMBYs that you need in your sights. And that's from Jolita Meakin of Braunston Town.
Mags Lewis, Leicester Green Party, writes, "Heed children, they are our future leaders." Leicester Green Party would like to warmly congratulate the youth strikers for their ongoing protests about the climate emergency. In the face of political inaction, these future voters have worked hard in their own time to organise effective protests and make the demos safe. Currently, their protests are totally legal and non-violent, and they are youth strikes for and organised by children. They steward and coordinate the demo, ban political party symbols from it, have a policy on safeguarding against creeps, welcome under-11s only with carers, instruct strikers to obey the law and police officers' instructions, inform police, city council and all secondary head teachers of these provisions, have designated first aiders. All adults ought to acknowledge and praise these organisational efforts, not censor them. We all need to ask ourselves, why has it taken protests from our children to wake up our adult leaders and politicians to the science supporting the climate emergency? Will our leaders now actually lead and offer action, not just warm, empty words? Will they now stop road building and aviation expansions? Our children, our future leaders and voters, are watching and will not forgive betrayal.
Mike Shaw, Birstall. "I missed Motown, but I did see the Stones. Historical date with Legends of Motown. Mailbox, September 23rd. I too remember the 1965 concert at the Odeon in Queen Street featuring Diana Ross and the Supremes, although I couldn't make it to the gig either. The show I did see, there was the Rolling Stones with support bands the Mojos and Mike Berry and the Outlaws. It was a good venue and we had a great time. Happy days."
This is a letter from Judith Shaw of Leicester. "Gentlemen at Curve deserved an ovation. My visit to Curve to see the magnificent National Theatre's production of Warhorse on the first night was a very moving experience, which was not limited to the brilliance of the stagecraft. I am a wheelchair user who has always transferred to a seat in the auditorium to watch the performance. My husband always assists me, but on this occasion my legs completely gave way, so the manoeuvre was not going well. At the point when the struggle seemed doomed, along came help from someone in the same row who, without fuss, helped my husband get me into the seat comfortably and securely. Not only that, but the very kind gentleman and his wife again assisted us to get me back in my wheelchair at the end of the marvellous performance. Their kindness was contagious as others nearby in seats made sure everything was okay. Many, many thanks to my anonymous knight in shining armour who came to my aid. I felt he deserved a standing ovation in the same way as the audience gave the marvellous and memorable performance I was able to enjoy. It feels so good to confirm my belief that people are basically good and kind." From Judith Shaw of Leicester.
Elizabeth Allison of Aylston writes, "More badges will be unnecessarily culled. With the government's preoccupation with Brexit, it could seem little else was in progress. However, it appears there is time to issue more licences to cull badges despite substantial scientific evidence that such an action is inhumane, unscientific, ineffective and unnecessary. Badger cull extended, September the 12th. By the end of 2018, more than 67,000 badgers had been killed. It is estimated taxpayers are paying £1,000 per badger culled. An independent government-commissioned report shows the cull has had little impact on the spread of bovine TB and that ministers are willfully ignoring scientific advice. Recent official figures from Wales show a 21% increase in bovine TB in the 12 months to May. Years ago, an expert panel headed by Lord Krebs studied the effectiveness of an earlier pilot cull. Sir David Attenborough agreed with the findings, saying, "They say killing badgers will not make the situation better, except in the very short term, and will almost certainly make it much worse." TV presenter Chris Packham called the cult sad and shameful and Thugs, Liars and Frauds will destroy our wildlife and dishonour our nation's reputation as conservationists and animal lovers. Do we believe experts, Sir David Attenborough, Chris Packham and independent scientists, or an arrogant government incapable of admitting its mistakes?
Mike Cross, Wixton. I can't see progress, but youngsters offer hope. Fair play to Oliver Hawke for his continued law support and encouragement for our county cricket club. But I really can't agree on his statement that things are gradually improving in all areas of the club. Finishing in bottom place, all the three competitors say otherwise, and the truth is that the team is not as good as the rest. I sincerely hope Paul Nixon continues because he is steeped in history of the county and has the ability to knit a team together with the help of several coaches. If he can unearth a captain who has good cricket ability and the character to inspire the young talent which already exists in the second 11, county should enjoy more success. If we add Azad Abbas and the promising Evans, who have already made an impressive first appearance in the first 11, there is a basis for hope next season. Of course, Nixon and co. are not helped to raise a profile and gain continuity of effort and approach when the ridiculous spread of fixtures see four home games in April and September. A young, spirited team with a good leader can help divert major interest from 20 over 20 in 2020 to the league competition, and I look forward to more emphasis in this area.
We have now reached the end of the Leicester Mercury Talking newspaper. If you wish to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone the Vista helpline on 0116 249 8839. And so it's goodbye from Sally.
Goodbye from Bev.
Goodbye from Aggie.